is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
It's Wednesday, September 4th, 2019. This is the Baseball Tonight podcast. I'm Buster Olney. And back in Bristol, Troy Farkas producing. And Troy, today is a litmus test for you.
Why is that?
Well, because I think that when we pick the game of the day, there should be an absolutely obvious choice. And you better pick the right one. I don't want to have any Rangers bias coming in here today. What do you think?
I think we're going to agree. We've actually been agreeing a lot over the past, ever since we had this conversation on the air about it. I think we've agreed every single day now that I have conformed to your standards.
Let me just say, there's a chance that you will be fired by the end of the show if you don't pass this litmus test today, okay?
All right, let's see.
Okay. Last night, Brewers, Astros. This is obviously a big game between two contenders. The Astros have finished with the best record in baseball. The Brewers trying to make the playoffs. And in the bottom of the third inning, Eric Thames got a big hit.
1-0 pitch. Thames, high drive, right center field. Reddick looking up. Thames has hit it out. Brewers have a 4-1 lead on the 20th home run of the season by Eric Thames.
That was something the Brewers really needed. That from 620 WTMJ. In the bottom of the fifth inning, a scary moment for the Astros.
The kick and the pitch. And Braun hits it pretty well to center. Springer is going back, still back at the wall. Leaps, makes the catch right in front of the wall, and hits the ground hard. Springer in some pain. He's rolling around on the warning track right in front of the wall as Reddick and Brantley both going out to check on him. And now A.J. Hinch out of the dugout with trainer Jeremiah Randall. A great catch by George Springer, but he is in some pain.
Robert Ford, KBME 790 AM. Yeah, he fell backward against the wall. His head hit against the wall. He had to be carted off. A.J. Hinch, the Astros manager, talked about the situation.
I didn't really know what happened. I mean, we could see that he ran into the wall, but I didn't know, you know, what. Could be shoulder, could be head, could be back, could be ankle, could be anything. And we get out there, you know, Jeremiah and I and half the team. So those are always really scary. You know, your mind starts racing as to what, you know, what it could be. But, you know, then you just kind of have to wait for the medical evaluation.
Now, after the game, Springer was talking to teammates in the Astros clubhouse. And sources told me that he was hopeful and upbeat and feeling like he's going to be okay. But obviously, with all the uncertainty around head injuries, around possible concussions, you can understand why the Astros are working through some evaluations. The Indians face the White Sox, and Carlos Carrasco was back on the mound in Cleveland for the first time since his leukemia diagnosis was revealed.
Top of the eighth inning here in Cleveland, and look who's coming on the pitch before a standing ovation. Carlos Carrasco returns to the Progressive Field mound for the first time since late May. And boy, what an ovation he got here to now try and protect a 5-2 lead.
You see the White Sox very respectful, and we felt it out here. You could see it as soon as he was coming down the steps of the bullpen. Everyone's psyched to see him back.
That sound from Fox Sports, so great to see Carrasco back. That was a great moment for the Indians last night, but then there was a tough moment for the Indians in the top of the eighth.
And the pitch to James, swinging a high fly ball to left. This is it well. At the track, at the wall. It is gone. We tied the game at five here in the eighth.
How about that? First pitch slider, and he leaned all over that one.
Ed Farmer, Darren Jackson on WGN. So they tied the game with that home run, and then they broke that tie right after that.
Oh, and he hung that one. Eloy to right field. Puig back at the warning track. It is gone over the wall. That got over the line and out of here for a White Sox lead.
Jason Benetti on WGN Sports. And, yeah, the White Sox would beat the Indians 6-5. Their chances for winning the American League Central disappearing. The Twins face the Red Sox in Fenway Park, and they jumped all over the Red Sox early in this game.
And that ball's well hit center field, and that is going to be up, and go! A Nelson Cruz home run straightaway center field. His 35th of the year, and the Twins fans are here.
Dan Gladden on the Treasure Island Baseball Network. The Twins would hold a 6-0 lead, and they would fend off a Red Sox comeback to win 6-5. The Oakland Athletics against the Angels. And in the bottom of the sixth inning, Seth Brown got a big hit.
Ramirez to the plate. And a swing and a smash down the right field line, heading toward the corner. Fair ball. Right on the stripe. It goes deep in the corner. It's extra bases. Canna's around third. He's going to score. Brown to third base. He's got another triple. And the A's have got a 6-5 lead.
Vince Catronio, 860 AM. The answer, the A's win 7-5. Tampa Bay and the Orioles played a doubleheader because of the hurricane that has been approaching Florida. They moved up the third game of this series to form this doubleheader. The Orioles won the first game, and in the second game, the Rays came back.
Meadows lifts one in the air, deep to right, way up there, all the way back, Santander to the wall. It's gone! Home run! Number 26 for Austin Meadows, and the Rays take a 1-0 lead.
That from 620 WDAE, the Rays win game 2, 2-0. The Yankees and the Rangers, and James Paxton was outstanding. Seven scoreless. He struck out 12. He's now on a seven-game win streak. And Gary Sanchez set a mark.
Sanchez wraps one deep to right field. See ya. A long opposite field home run. And a new Yankee record for a catcher. 34 home runs in a season. 6-0 Bombers.
Michael Kay on the YES Network. Edwin Encarnacion was back in the Yankees lineup doing the parrot stuff.
High drive, left field. Going back Calhoun, turning, looking, see ya. Walk the parrot. He's been in a cage for a month. It is 10-0 Yanks.
And the final score there would be 10-1. The Diamondbacks facing the Padres, and Merrill Kelly had a great night on the mound.
1-2 from Merrill Kelly. Hosmer takes strike three. Boy, that ball had a lot of movement. It looked like it was going to be inside. It just tailed over the inside corner. That's nine strikeouts for Merrill Kelly.
Greg Schulte, Arizona Sports Radio, 98.7 FM. The Diamondbacks win 2-0. The Cubs facing the Mariners, a game that they in which the Cubs need to take care of business, and a newcomer really got them jump-started.
Here comes the 0-1. Castellanos swings. Drives one to deep right field. Way back. Going back is Smith. He looks up. It's gone! A three-run home run by Nicholas Castellanos. Cubs lead 5-0.
And they go on and win 6-1. That sound from the Cubs Radio Network. And by the way, Jed Hoyer, the Cubs general manager, some really interesting comments about how the Cubs haven't been as good as the front office expected. We'll be hearing those in a little while coming up in the podcast. The Cardinals facing the Giants, and Jack Flaherty has been baseball's best pitcher over the last 6 weeks, and he was great again last night.
Oh, two offering. Swing and a miss. Struck him out. That's six Ks now.
Pitch number 9 of the at-bat. He got him. He got him. Strikeout on the outside corner, 8-0.
That sound from Mike Shannon and Dan McLaughlin on the Cardinals Radio Network and the Cardinals Television Network. Jack Flaherty, a 0.85 ERA since the All-Star break. He actually carried a no-hitter into the sixth inning in this game in St. Louis's 1-0 victory. The Braves beat the Blue Jays 7-2. Josh Donaldson trolling on his former teammates.
So it comes set to the plate. Fastball ripped to left field. That's going to get out for a hit. It's going to get two runs in. Josh is on his way to second as he doubles off the bullpen wall out in left field. 4-0 Atlanta, and give Donaldson his 81st and 82nd RBIs of the year. His third, second and third tonight.
Joe Simpson, 680, the fan. The Phillies in Cincinnati facing the Cincinnati Reds. They, of course, won on Sunday night. The Phillies won again on Monday. And on Tuesday, Scott Kingery helped them out.
The pitch swung on, hit well, right field. Aquino going back, still going back. He looks up at the wall, and it is gone. Opposite field, line drive home run for Scott Kingery. And for Kingery, it's his 17th of the season. And the Phillies get that run back. It's now 5-2.
Scott Fransky, Sports Radio 94 WIP.
Deep center field.
The game.
It's gone!
Of the day.
And Troy, what is the game of the day? Your employment rides on your answer.
I think it has to be the Mets and the Nationals.
It's gotta be. Nice job. Wow. What a game between these two teams. Of course, started out with Jacob deGrom and Max Scherzer on the mound. You're thinking low scoring, but then the Mets seemed to blow it open in the top of the ninth inning with an explosion of runs.
And Pete drives one to center field. Back goes Robles for a look, but it's out of here! Number 44 for Pete Alonso! The Mets have brought the roof crashing in on the Nationals. Alonso with a two-run homer to put the icing on the cake. 10-4 in the ninth.
Gary Cohn on SNY saying what we all thought. The roof crashing down on the Nationals, the icing on the cake. But you know what? The Mets have their bullpen. Bottom of the ninth inning, Washington rallied. They loaded the bases, and Edwin Diaz came on to face Ryan Zimmerman.
10-6 now. Zimmerman, right center, well hit, and it's up against the scoreboard. Two runs will score. Held at third is Soto, and it's 10-8.
Bob Carpenter on Masson. Yeah, Zimmerman got a fastball away and drove it to the opposite field to drive in a couple of runs. That brought Kurt Suzuki to the plate. Two runners on base. Washington trailing 10-8.
Here's the set. 3-2. Suzuki swung on. Hit deep to left field. Way back. Going. Going. It's gone. Goodbye. Game over. Kurt Suzuki has done it again. Bang. Zoom goes Suzuki.
Charlie Slows in the Nationals radio network. I'm guessing it sounded a little different on the Mets radio network.
3-2 the count. Here's the payoff pitch. Swing and a drive deep to left field. The Nationals are going to win. A three-run walk-off home run for Kurt Suzuki. Edwin Diaz has just had another epic meltdown, and the Mets have lost maybe their toughest game of the year in a season when Diaz has been in the middle of several.
Maybe the toughest game in their history. If you look at the run swing that happened in this game, that was Howie Rose on WCBS. The Mets went into existence in 1962. They'd had 806 games in which they carried a lead of 6-plus runs into the ninth inning, and they had won all of them. And then they lost that one last night. The Nationals franchise went into existence in 1969. They had played 775 games in which they trailed by 6-plus runs going the ninth inning, and they had never won any of them. But they win this one. Kurt Suzuki spoke with Masson after the game.
Game's never over until it's over. You know, we just try to put good at-bats together, and this happens.
Kurt, what was it like for you to come through in this moment for your ball club?
Oh, it's what you strive for every day. You want to help the team out any way you can. I don't know. It's a pretty cool moment right now.
What's going through your mind right now?
Let's enjoy this one and come back tomorrow and do it all again, right?
Dave Martinez, the Nationals manager, talked about the comeback.
I mean, this was, if I had to put it up against anything, this was game 162 that I was, you know, that we were in Tampa. I mean, that kind of comeback. I mean, the boys are still in there jacked up, and I had to remind them we got a day game tomorrow. Go home. but it's awesome. Yeah, hey, go home. We got a game tomorrow.
Yeah, so we're going to be talking about the Nationals' great comeback, and we're going to talk about what Mickey Callaway said after the game. But before we lead off with Dave Schoenfield, do you ever feel like ticketing websites make getting to the event difficult on purpose? It's as if they're so big they can get away with not caring about the customer experience. The real question is, how easy could it be if those ticketing websites actually cared? With millions of live event tickets and a price match guarantee, SeatGeek proves there's a better way. Search sports, live music, comedy, and more. SeatGeek has the tickets you're looking for all in one place. They built the fastest way to find tickets, so you can stop searching for the perfect seat and start enjoying it. A quick look at the App Store shows over 50,000 five-star reviews. How's that for customer satisfaction? It's a better process. SeatGeek pulls together millions of tickets from all over the web. Then it rates each deal on a scale of 1 to 10. Finally, SeatGeek displays them on an interactive seat map. SeatGeek breaks down the details. Green dots mean good deals. Red dots are overpriced. And every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets with confidence. I bought tickets to a Titans game in Charlotte recently to go there with my son in November. Can't wait for that. And of course, I bought tickets to a concert in Fenway Park coming up later this month. It's tremendous. SeatGeek will even give you $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. All you need to do is use our promo code. Download the SeatGeek app today and use promo code BUSTER for $10 off on your first purchase. That's promo code BUSTER for $10 off on your first purchase.
Welcome to the show!
Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show!
Welcome to the show, mate.
Welcome to the show. Whoa!
Welcome to the show, baby.
You're in the show with David Schoenfield.
Yeah, we know what the show's about today, the Nationals' epic comeback. And, Dave, you'll be excited to learn that Troy Farkas, he's going to continue to be employed by ESPN because he picked the right game for the game of the day.
It is funny because Troy sends us the note before we go on air about some of the topics and the highlights and all that. And I go down and I'm looking and I'm thinking, Troy better have picked the Mets and the Nationals as his game of the day. Or Buster will not be happy. So, Troy, good job.
Thank you.
A-plus, Troy.
Thank you very much.
A-plus. You nailed it.
I'm patting myself on the shoulder.
Very nice. Now, it's funny, Dave, I watched the early parts of that game. I was switching back and forth between a bunch of different games last night. And, you know, you've got DeGrom and you've got Scherzer, and then it looks like the Mets have taken control early, and then they blow it open in the top of the ninth inning. And then I checked my computer, and it's mentioned that the Nationals have put some guys on base, and the score was 10-6. So I switch over just to see Edwin Diaz come into the game to face Ryan Zimmerman, pinch hitting. And Ryan Zimmerman looks for a fastball away. He gets it, and he absolutely smoked it. And at that point, it was 10-8, and the Washington was down by a couple runs. But in the back of your mind, having watched the Mets bullpen all year, you're like, no, they're going to lose. Like, the Nationals are going to pull off one of the great comebacks of all time.
It's funny. I did the exact same thing. I had Jack Flaherty on my computer. I had the Mets and the Nationals on my TV. But after the Mets scored, what, 5 in the top of the ninth, I flipped over to the Red Sox and the Twins, which I think it was 6-5 at the time. Same thing. I saw the runners on. I flipped over. It must have been about the exact same time you did. Yeah, I saw that double, and then it's, what, 10-8, two runners on, and you're like, yeah, there's still only one out. And as many bad outings as Edwin Diaz has had this year, unfortunately, this one tops them all.
Yeah, and I saw some Mets fans on Twitter last night going after Mickey Callaway for decisions. Seth Lugo has been so great for them. He pitched the eighth inning. He pulls him out of the game. And I was just like, no, you can't do that. If you got a 6-run lead going into the bottom of the 10th inning, you should have a pretty high expectation of winning. And as I noted a few minutes ago, it's the first time in the Mets history that this had happened, where they blew a run of 6-plus runs in the ninth inning. Look, yeah, all the guys they turned to, some of the guys they turned to had actually been throwing the ball okay. But Edwin Diaz, man, what a tough year for him. Here's Mickey Callaway after the game talking about what happened.
Paulie just couldn't get it going. Like you said, he's been great. You know, he had a 6-run lead. He was falling behind a little bit, just wasn't executing his pitches, gave up some hits. Avalon actually came in, made a good pitch, got a ground ball just to the left of McNeil. So that was a little bit out of reach. And then, man, it looks like Diaz's stuff is electric. You know, he's throwing 99, he's touching 100, and they just hit it. Yeah, it's tough. You know, great at bat by Suzuki right there to keep alive. But man, that's tough.
It was a tough one for sure. And Mickey made reference to the fact that, you know, the Mets have had this happen before. And it's funny, he was talking about Diaz's electric stuff. He's 100% right. Dave, it wasn't like that he was coming out throwing slop. I thought that Ryan Zimmerman pulled off a great at-bat, looking for a fastball. He hits high velocity out to right center field. And Kurt Suzuki fouled off some nasty pitches. Diaz had a great slider, and then he jumps on a pitch and walks it off.
Yeah, no, Suzuki, a couple bad swings at sliders. He somehow fouled off that 100-mile-an-hour fastball that was up in the zone. Then I think it was the next pitch, another 100-mile-an-hour fastball. It's really the only mistake Diaz made, because that one was right down the middle, and Suzuki hit it. You know, our old friend Jason Stark, he picks his Cy Yuck of the year every year, and I think Diaz is going to be in the running for that. 1-7, 5.65 ERA, 25 for 31 in saves. And, you know, he a lot of home runs, 13 home runs in 51 innings. You know, it's not all on him because Paul Sewald and Luis Avalon gave up some runners too. But for what they gave up for Diaz, he just has been one of the biggest disappointments of the season.
Yeah, and this obviously, I mean, an absolutely crushing blow for the Mets. They're hanging on by their fingernails at the very bottom of the National League wild card race, and to suffer a loss like this, this might be remembered as a finishing blow for them. According to our website, their chance for making the playoffs are down to about 7%. But I really feel like this game said more about the Nationals and who they've been over the last few months. I think it's May 23rd, 59-28 with a plus 160 run differential. Hembo sent that to me this morning. If you compare that to the Dodgers, since that time, the Dodgers 59-32, a plus 164 run differential. And we've been saying here the last couple of weeks, of all the teams in the National League, the Nationals may not necessarily be positioned well to take down the Dodgers because they still have to go through the wild card game, assuming that they, you know, they ride out as the number one wild card team. But I still think that they may be the biggest threat to the Dodgers. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm with you. And that record, the amazing thing about that record is their bullpen still really hasn't figured things out. We saw that with some of the middle guys, you know, last night in the ninth inning. Sean Dolittle, of course, is still on the IL, and he had a couple huge blown saves, including one against the Mets, you know, back in August. So as good as they are, they still do have that one glaring weakness, but the lineup is obviously deep, and nobody in the National League except the Dodgers can match the front of the rotation. Although Scherzer, you know, he hasn't quite been Max Scherzer, you know, since he came off the IL we saw last night. Good, but not great. But yeah, look, if they can get past that wild card game, they have a chance to go all the way, no doubt about it.
Well, and let's be honest here. Which of the National League contenders has a strong bullpen?
Yeah. We've talked about it, right? It's just unbelievable. Day after day, somebody in the National League blows a big game.
Yeah, and so today the Mets, they start the day 5 games behind the Chicago Cubs in the race for the second wild card. They may effectively be finished by the end of today. Speaking of the Cubs, yesterday a really interesting interview that Jed Hoyer, the Cubs general manager, did on 670 The Score, McNeil and Parkins. He was absolutely dead honest about this current group of players and what they haven't accomplished over recent seasons. And this is a relatively long clip. It's a couple minutes, but give a listen here, Dave.
I feel like individually in some ways we have a lot of guys that are having good seasons, but what we just haven't turned into that offensive juggernaut that I think we expected in 2015. When you looked at the lineup, you're like, oh my God, at 27, 28, this lineup's going to be impossible to pitch to.
And everybody was supposed to be a future MVP.
Yeah, and that's what hasn't you know, evolved in that way. So yeah, I can't explain it. I'm still hopeful that we can get there. But that, you know, that said, I mean, it is something that I think we've looked at. Like, why, you know, we're still a very good offense in a lot of ways, but we haven't evolved into that monstrous offense of 27, 28, 29 year olds that we expected, I think, in 2015. And, you know, I think I said it a couple of times this year that sometimes it feels like we're a little bit less than the sum of our parts. And that's how I've always explained it, that we have a ton of really good players and some of those players are having really good seasons, but the collective offense has not gotten to the point we expected.
So in that vein, you said earlier, you know, you're running out of season. It's undeniably true. Does it also feel like you're running out of time for that collective to reach their potential?
Yeah. I mean, I think that it's obviously something we talk about. You know, we talk about how much control, how much service time you have of each guy. And, I think that sometimes when there's moments of frustration, I think some of that frustration is that dynamic that, yes, we're running out of season, but also, you know, we don't control these players in their 20s forever. And, you know, I think that, you know, both Theo and I, we love offense. I think, you know, we sort of came up with the Red Sox and these grinding offenses. And, you know, I think what we want more than anything is to sort of be able to recreate that. And we haven't gotten to that point. We've gotten to the point of, you know, at times good or very good, but we have not gotten to that excellent level where I think we can be. We just haven't gotten there. And I think, yeah, there's some frustration there, of course.
So, Dave, I mean, the Chicago Cubs, of course, this group of players, they won the World Series in 2016. They'll always be remembered for that. But as I was listening to Jed's comments, I began to think, you know what? There's going to be some layers to the legacy of these players if they don't win the World Series again, that they're going to be remembered maybe in the same way that those mid-'80s Mets are remembered, or the late 80s Oakland Athletics, the Atlanta Braves that won all those division titles and won one championship, those Cleveland Indians team that never won the championship, where there's going to be this feeling of, yeah, they won the World Series, but, man, they didn't turn out to be as good as we all thought they were going to be.
Yeah, I think right now that's a fair assessment. You know, obviously the season has to play out, but yeah, Hoyer, he's right on about the offense. Yeah, they have five guys slugging over 500, but I think every team has five guys slugging over 500 this year. They're sixth in the NL in runs scored. They're third in fewest runs allowed. So just based on that, yeah, their defense pitching has been better than their offense. Chris Bryant, the numbers look like every other Chris Bryant year, but the offense is up across the league. So his OPS plus isn't as good as he's had in the past. Javier Baez, we love him, but .316 on base, that's not superstar level. Rizzo is really the only guy kind of having a typical year. Wilson Contreras has been solid, but yeah, they thought those four along with Kyle Schwarber would be this absolute superstar lineup, lead the league and run scored every year, and that has not happened this year.
No, some pressure on the Cubs as we move forward because, of course, you know, last year they wound up being host to the wild card game. They lost. They were eliminated quickly. Theo Epstein, head of baseball ops for the Cubs, talked afterward about a lack of urgency. They, as we reported over the wintertime, they indicated other teams, look, if you got a good offer for Chris Bryant, we're all ears. And you do wonder if they wind up back in the same situation, if Theo and Jed will be more aggressive in saying, we're going to start turning over some of this team, because you could hear the disappointment there in what Jed was saying. Yeah. Now, speaking of the Cardinals, you watched, as you mentioned, Jack Flaherty last night. I think right now he's the best pitcher in baseball, with all due respect to, you know, the two great Houston pitchers, in terms of just pure domination and stuff, man, he's at the top of the mountain right now.
Yeah, I remember earlier this year we were talking about him and how we had expected him to be a Cy Young candidate and he had struggled early on. Well, yeah, last 11 starts, 0.90 ERA, 141 batting average allowed. Last night, one hit in eight innings. His 100th pitch was 97 miles an hour, his fastest pitch of the game. He threw 29 balls to 26 batters. I'm with you. I mean, is he the best? We can throw that out there for debate. There's no doubt he's absolutely the hottest pitcher right now. And it looks like that sort of baton has officially been passed from Chris Carpenter to Adam Wainwright and now to Jack Flaherty. This guy is going to be the ace of the staff, and he's going to put that rotation on his back in the postseason. And maybe they're the team that goes all the way, and it's not the Nationals or the Dodgers.
And the 23-year-old comp for me, you know, and that's how old Flaherty is now, is Justin Verlander. Like, he reminds me of a Verlander. When you talk to Jack Flaherty, you're like, that guy's a hoss. Like, he is a big dude. And that presence really seems to ride out on the mound. You assume that hitters are feeling it.
Yeah, and I love that they left him in last night. I think he threw 113 pitches. In this day and age, a lot of those guys would have come out after the seventh inning when he was, you know, in the upper 90s or 100. They let him throw that extra inning, and that's a good way to send him up. He gives you that extra inning, which in this day, to me, that's a big deal. And Justin Verlander, even though he's, how old is he, 36 or whatever, he still gives you that extra inning, and that just saves the bullpen a little more. And that, you're right, he is a big old horse. He's got more pitches actually than a young Verlander did, and he throws almost as hard. He's going to be one of the best for years to come.
All right, Dave, well, I appreciate it, and I appreciate your appreciation for Troy this morning. I mean, golf claps for Troy. He
good
nailed
job
it.
Troy, yay.
The other day, Boog Shambi caught up with Bryce Harper of the Phillies to talk about his love for baseball history. Give a listen.
Let's start with this. New dad. Congratulations. What's that like?
Oh, it's been great. I appreciate that. It's been really good. It's, you know, something that, you know, my dad, you know, he talked to me about, and all the players in here talked to me about, you know, really, really enjoy it and, you know, enjoy the moment, enjoy the family, things like that. And I was able to do that and then, you know, get back with these guys and kind of share that moment with them. And, you know, pretty cool.
I want to bounce around and keep it a little bit offbeat. You mentioned your dad, so we'll start there. I remember talking to Dusty Baker one time. He said there wasn't a guy that he could bring up historically in terms of talking baseball that you didn't know who he was, and he was impressed by that as someone who's a little bit younger. Is that your dad's influence? What is that from in terms of knowing some of the history of the game and absorbing it?
Yeah, I think, you know, definitely my dad, but also just watching, you know, seeing a lot of, you know, old guys and things like that, if that's ESPN Century or whatever it was. But, you know, I think watching a lot of the movies too, you know, 61, Eight Men Out, being a long traveling all-stars, you know, certain movies that, you know, you look back on and you kind of, you watch them. And I mean, even like The Sandlot, you know, Babe Ruth and, you know, that kind of stuff. So, doing that, watching the movies, going to Cooperstown at a young age, 10, 11 years old, seeing that. So you kind of, they really enjoy the old players and things like that. So I grew to love them and, you know, kind of watch video on them and see them at that young age. And, you know, that's why we're here playing the game today. Yep. So you kind of have to pay your respects to the guys that played before you and, you know, do that.
Can you, for me, just in quick form, I want to hear it out of your mouth, tell me about your number. Start with 3 plus 4 as 34 in D.C., and then how you picked 3 here and the choice that went along with it.
Yeah. You know, growing up, I always wore 7. You know, I did that, you know, Mantle, Pudge, you know, as a catcher, so I saw that. So, you know, I really enjoyed, like I said, the old style of the game, you know, things like that. So, went to another team. All I had was, you know, 34, you know, picked my number and, you know, 3 plus 4 was 7. So, started wearing that. And then, you know, when I came here, family number was 3. You know, my whole family kind of wore 3. My mom wore 13. My brother wore 33. My dad wore 3. So, I kind of just, you know, my dad wore it. So, you know, why not just keep it in the family and, you know, I'll take that.
All right. Joey Gallo told me an awesome story. I went up to him and I go, give me your best Bryce Harper story. And he put his head down, and then he said, okay, I'm 8, he's 9. He struck out. He was really mad because he never struck out. It was the last out of the inning, and he was pitching, and I was catching, and I didn't know how to catch. And he went out there, and he was really mad, and he threw every pitch as hard as he possibly could, and eventually one of them went in the dirt, and I turned my body, and it hit me in the ribs, and I cried, and they took me out of the game, and so I sat next to Bryce's mom eating ice cream the rest of the game, and I never caught again. Go.
Oh, man. He remembers a lot of stuff. I don't remember that. I think I remember him taking one on the side, but, man, I remember Gallo just hitting homers a lot when we were younger. I mean, he, very special talent that he was. I mean, still is today. But yeah, I mean, growing up playing with those guys, it was always fun.
Thanks for the time, man. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Jumping into the numbers.
After evaluating millions of pieces of data in the blink of an eye, the winner is Cincinnati by 200 points. Why, you worthless hunk of junk.
This is Hembo Knows.
And Hembo is Paul Imbakides, who I wanted to introduce as honcho on the show Get Up, but he reminded me last week that, in fact, he is the honcho.
Thank you much.
On the show Get Up. You know, Pete McConville and Mike Greenberg, forget it. Paul Imbakides is the main source. Hembo, how you doing today?
Buster, I am outstanding. Just enjoying the banter that you and I have with one Troy Farkas. And we'll keep a lot of that, you know, that private stuff to ourselves, at least for now.
Man, there's some explosive stuff.
Yeah, there are some real details there, but we're going to withhold those for a later day. That's what we call a teaser in the business. But right now, I'm just thrilled as a Phillies fan because we're finally back in this thing again. I'm not 100% sure that we're going to make it all the way back, but with Harper hitting again and Hoskins hitting again and like the lineup finally looking like it's rounding into form in a way that it has not in a long time. We just need to get enough pitching, but that schedule down the stretch, as you know, is really difficult.
Yeah, you buying it? I mean, you know, you saw your good friend. You and I have a lot of mutual Mets fans friends, and they, of course, fell into that trap of buying it. Are you buying it?
I am buying it, but I will say this. The Cubs, with the 2.5 game advantage that they've built, with a roster that I like a little bit more, frankly, and an easier schedule down the stretch, the Phillies are overcoming a lot. But look, the Cubs have not run away with this thing, and they haven't really even given an indication that they're going to. Chris Bryant's really still not hitting well. Like, there's a lot of guys in that lineup that are sort of not pulling their weight. So, look, they're leaving the door open for the Phillies. And look, so long as they're playing meaningful games the last week of the season, I suppose at this point, that's all that you can really ask for.
All right, let's talk about what happened last night with the Mets and about their situation.
All right, so in my judgment, Edwin Diaz has lost more value than any pitcher in baseball this season. Let's start with his performance. Yesterday, he allowed his 8th home run of the season when pitching with a lead of multiple runs, Buster. That's second most in baseball. And for the season, he's allowed 9 homers on his fastball. That's 7 more than he allowed all of last season, despite the same average velocity. What theoretically made Diaz so valuable this year was his affordability, but his salary of $600,000 is expected to balloon 1,400% through arbitration, as you have noted. The Mets have the 4th most money committed in payroll for next season at $127 million, and that doesn't include the arbitration-eligible player. So if they're going to keep up trying to win, they're going to have to pay a pretty penny.
How does the tanking in baseball affect the pennant race?
Well, this is the second straight year that the American League pennant race is being shaped in large part by non-competitive teams. Last season, the Red Sox used a 16-3 record against the Orioles to help secure the best record in baseball. This year, it's the Yankees' turn. They own the best record after going 17-2 versus Baltimore. Buster, they posted the same slugging percentages in those 19 games as Lou Gehrig did in his career. It's affecting the Central too, though. The Indians are 15-1 against Detroit, which has won consecutive games once in the last 3 months. Cleveland is only 7 games above 500 in all other games, a record that would have them well outside the playoff picture. In the National League, the Phillies have lost 9 games against the shameless Marlins, which is 5 more than any team in baseball in all other games. Philly is 65-56, a record bettered only by the Dodgers, Braves, and Cardinals in the National League. So all that to say, Buster, the postseason is being shaped by how well teams beat up on the bottom feeders, and I, for one, don't like that one bit.
And what do you got on Justin Verlander?
At the ripe old age of 36, Justin Verlander is genuinely having one of the greatest pitching seasons ever, despite the juiced ball. For starters, he's been unhittable. The league is batting .166 against him, on pace to be the lowest mark in the live ball era, which dates to 1920. Pedro Martinez is the current record holder. The league batted .167 against him in 2000. Secondly, his base runner allowance has been unprecedented. Opposing hitters own a .212 on base percentage against him, which would be the lowest mark in the last 100 years. He owns a whip of .77 and has allowed only 7.2 base runners per 9 innings. Those are numbers topped in the live ball era only by Pedro's aforementioned season in 2000. And Buster, third, his durability is unfathomable for the era in which he pitches. In his no-hitter on Sunday, Verlander's average fastball velocity was higher in the 8th inning than it was in the first 7 and higher in the 9th than the 8th. Further, he's faced 200 batters the third time through the order, generating 61 strikeouts against 3 walks. And that is why he's my Cy Young pick over teammate Gerrit Cole, who has yet to throw a single pitch after the 7th inning this season. Buster, Verlander has thrown 100.
Well, and it's not a surprise that, Verlander is an outlier in, when you compare him to landscape to a baseball, much in the way that his baseball hero, Nolan Ryan, was. He has been tremendous. All right, Hembo, thank you.
Later, boys.
Because we're tired of getting yelled at for somebody else's work.
Bias!
And would rather get yelled at for the stupid stuff that we do.
And this is why the Seattle Mariners will play in the 2016 World Series.
Oh, what a loser!
This is the Baseball Tonight Power 10.
Yeah, so this is an interesting Power 10 because we've seen, with the Dodgers, Gavin Lux has come up. He's had an immediate impact. The Yankees get Edwin Encarnacion back last night. He immediately starts hitting home runs. And the other day, a guy named Verlander threw a no-hitter for the Astros. So, Troy, for me, top three, and we have the three super teams, and there's a gap. I got Yankees 1, Dodgers 2, Astros 3, in part because I still remember how the Yankees took a series from the Dodgers. What about you?
I've got Dodgers 1, in part because I love Gavin Lux. I love a lot, I still think they're the best team in baseball. Astros 2, Yankees 3.
Wow.
I'm from New York, and I'm going anti-New York because I don't like the Yankees.
Yeah, so the Yankees have more wins than the Astros, and you have the Astros ahead of the Yankees.
That's absolutely correct.
Yankees would have home field over the Astros.
But the Astros staff, do you realize how ridiculous, 1-2, you're
yes,
top two
I do.
You've got Wade Miley. God, they're so good.
They are really good. I got Twins 4, Braves 5, Cardinals 6. I was kind of torn. My son Jake, he monitors very closely, and I was thinking about the Braves 4, but man, the Twins are on fire.
Yeah, the Twins are so good. They're breaking records left and right. They're my 4. I've got Braves 5, and I've got the Rays 6.
The Rays, okay, and they're, you know, heading up the American League wild card race. I've got the Nationals. I think off of last night's game, a recency bias, I got them at number 7. I got the Rays at 8, Indians 9, Athletics at 10.
Yeah, I'm really struggling with my 6 through 10. So Rays 6, Nationals 7, also with that recency bias. And also the Cardinals, I love what Flaherty did. I've got at 8, at 9 I have the A's, and 10 the Indians. Even though they have the best record of my 7 through 10 teams, I think they're on the decline.
Yeah, it's interesting. We both have 6 American League teams, 4 National League teams. The Cubs not making either top 10.
No, they just haven't done it yet. What the Cardinals are hot, so you know, they're looking really good right now.
Bleacher Tweets.
Dave Buster, a couple of Bleacher Tweets for you this morning. Let's get right two of them. First one comes from Eric Johnson at ETJohnson1. Buster, after watching the Nationals come back from a 6-run deficit to win, does this Nats team remind you of any recent teams that just won't quit? Maybe the mid-2010s Giants?
Yeah, Eric, look, we talked about how I feel like the Nationals are a threat to the Dodgers and they could do some damage, but given Washington's long history of struggling in the postseason, I want to see it in that vein, in that realm first before I compare it to the Giants.
Fully agree. Next one comes from Simons on Sports at Simons on Sports. We talk about Verlander for the AL Cy Young, and in conversation we bring up how he is in some ways outperforming his MVP season. Is there any chance he could get MVP over Mike Trout now that he's thrown his third career no-no?
No. Mike Trout is running away. I'm sorry, but I mean, to me, it would be like, what was that? You know, there was a year, I think, like Michael Jordan lost the MVP to Karl Malone. LeBron had one of those, too, where who was the player, the other player that wound up beating him? I can't even remember who the other player was, but it was like, no, what are you talking about? The best player in baseball is Mike Trout. Wins above replacement in the American League among position players. He's at 8.7. Second, Alex Bregman at 6.7. Trout can take the rest of the season off. He's still the MVP.
That's pretty amazing. Next one comes from Drew Latin at Bleed Baseball 10. Do you think since batters are adjusting to the 94-plus mile-an-hour fastball that we will start seeing more pitchers work on slowing down to locate and spin the ball more accurately?
Yeah, Drew, I think that that's already started happening. You know, I had coaches tell me in spring that we might see baseball cycle back to those soft throwers. Guys like Dallas Keuchel working around the edges, taking advantage of the fact that the hitters are so geared up to hit velo.
Another one comes from Kyle Keener at Kyle Keener. Between now and when we finally get an automated strike zone, do you think it would be beneficial to allow challenges for balls and strikes, perhaps in the seventh inning or later?
Man, Kyle, I mean, your point is absolutely fair. That would make me cringe. Like, I'm already cringing about the NFL with this whole thing with pass interference.
I agree.
Oh, my gosh. I'm like, please don't go down that road. Just live with the computer whenever they do that.
And it'll just make the game that much longer, which I don't think it needs. Last one comes from P.K. Steinberg at P.K. Steinberg. Really good question. Which will happen first? The Padres throw their first no-hitter, Mariners win their first World Series, or Mike Trout plays in his first World Series?
PK, I'm going to say, and I know, Troy, you're not going to want to hear this as a Rangers fan, I think Trout playing in the World Series is closer than people realize if the Angels can find some pitching. If they go out and sign Garrett Cole this winter, Joe Adell, their terrific prospect, he ascends. You know, they add some depth to that rotation. I could see Trout playing in the World Series.
I can't
see the Padres throwing a no-hitter. They've come close so often, and for now, forget about the Mariners.
I don't know. I feel like Chris Paddock can throw a no-hitter. I mean, that's the one thing that you can't really predict at any point.
Yeah.
I mean, the Mariners, Mike Trout, you know, that has to require a full season. A no-hitter can come at any time. I think that's more likely.
You're right, Troy, but isn't it amazing? And PK's point is 50 years for the Padres. No hitters. And they've had so many near misses. I covered some of them when I was back at the San Diego Union Tribune. It's amazing, and it hasn't happened.
It's got to happen at some point. And plus, you said the Mariners were going to win the World Series in 2016. I said number
whatever.
10. What happened
yeah,
there?
Well, as I've established on the show, I'm never picking the Mariners again until they actually do it. Like, I would tease so often by the Mariners. I was like, you know, Charlie Brown having the football pulled away by Lucy over and over and over again.
Thank you for the tweets this morning. Thank you, PK, for the question. Keep them coming every day. Use the hashtag BleacherTweets.
That's it for today. My thanks to Bryce Harper, to Boog Shambi, to Paul Mbikides, to Dave Schoenfield, and to Troy Farkas. Nice job today, Troy.
Thanks, Buster. You too.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.